It was colder than a well digger's ankles in Cut Bank, Montana. But my heart was on fire when I saw her step down from the train. I'd been up there forever, but her arms were finally around me. All my icicles melted away at the sound of her name. I held her to me as tightly as I'd held her letter that said, "I don't love him. I'm leaving this cold, mean man." As the train pulled away from the platform and I put her in the wagon, with her head on my shoulder, God knows I was one happy man. And I went to heaven that night in her arms in my cabin. In the winter of 94, there burned such a powerful flame. They still hear her voice in the cabin in Cut Bank, Montana. And the icicles all melt away at the sound of her name. Hell rode into town one night on a Wyoming stallion, his heart full of hate and his eyes full of cold jealousy. One way or another, he said, "Partner, I'm taking back my woman." My hand on my gun, I said, "Don't bet your life. The lady says she's staying with me." His knife was a flash in the light of the kerosene lantern that fell as we tangled and fought in the fire. Was a dead man, but I have been too since I lost her. From the fire that burned me so bad as I crawled through the door. But I went to heaven that night in her arms in my little cabin. In the 94, there burned one hell of a flame. They still hear her voice in the cabin in Cut Bank, Montana. And the icicles all melt away at the sound of her name. Sound of her name.
White Area and Resistance Radio Network calling. White Area and Resistance Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in north central Indiana, where the corn grows high. We used to say knee high by 4th of July. Well, the corn across the road from me, it's about twice that high already. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donation for the radio show, $20 per month. Try to get it in around the 15th or earlier. And that's where you send your regular snail mail and your donations for prisoners and things like that. Whatever you decide, you earmark it where you want it to go, and I'll get it there. We've got to pick up some postal money orders today at the post office. We're due to send out to our three or four people that we send the $25 money orders to, and boy, they really appreciate it, because these prisons now are nothing but slave labor camps. Yeah, I know you're going to say, well, a lot of guys deserve to be in there. Well, maybe so, but not to be made slaves. They're working for, I think, somebody called Common Core, and they're traded on the stock exchange. They farmed out all these prisons. These guys are working for peanuts, and a lot of the prisons won't even issue shoes. We've got one man we take care of or help out down in Florida who was a creator, and he didn't even have shoes. Well, I see my microphone's turned the wrong way here. That's not too good. Anyhow, so we send him the money and he gets the shoes. And then we send books and things like that too. And what we want to do is get these guys that are going to be in there for a while, and they're young guys, to figure out a trade they'd like to get into. And I'll supply them with technical books for free, because I get them cheap through Abe TV or Abe Books. You can get a 200 or 300, maybe a 500 page textbook for around $3 or $4. And then they rip off the covers and they can send them into the prison. So anyhow, that's some of the stuff we're interested in. And that, of course, was our old friend Hank Williams Jr., a real unreconstructed Southerner. I have a lot of respect for him, carrying on the tradition of his daddy. And that was a request from merchandise. Yeah, my own merchandise out there. That was, you know, but I think that's a remake of a song that I heard years ago by somebody else, but I can't remember who sang it. But it's a good old song, that's for sure. I got a surprise later on to sing it, because we got a lone wolf out there that's a budding music lyrics writer, and that person has sent me a song to take this words to take this job and shove it. I'm going to just give you a run through today, but I'm going to get some more verses to that thing and have that person help me, and then I'm going to get the music to it, and I think we'll have something good, because when I go out and sing karaoke some places, I can get away with a lot of stuff. Down here at the local VFW, which is a real working class outfit, they get a kick out of it when I sing that. If that ain't country, I'll kiss your ass. Yeah. Well, it rained again last night. It seems like it rains every day or every other day now. If it keeps this up till wintertime, do you realize we're going to have snow 10 foot deep all the time? Because if it's raining like this and then it snows like this, whoa, boy. I'm setting up my escape pod to get out of here for at least a couple of 3 weeks if it gets real bad. Well, you know what that means, boys and girls. We're getting closer and closer. To what? Well, I guess we're going to find out. Well, one thing I worry about, a lot of the people who talk about races, they never talk about things that impact race. Economics impacts the race terribly. The environment impacts the race terribly. And a lot of other things that your typical right-wing so-called racial people don't talk about. They just want to talk about those niggers and no Jews. Yeah, so anyhow, speaking about news, financial news, let's go to Max Kaiser here. I heard a good bit of a show, 15 minutes from him the other day, which was really good. I'm going to play it, okay? Get ready. Don't bite all your fingernails off.
The Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. You know, Plato. One said, excess of liberty, whether it lies in the state or individual, seems only to pass into excess of slavery. Which is how you can tell just how much liberty the banks have taken over the past four decades, is everywhere one looks is an excess of debt slavery. Wow, philosophically, I have to agree with you on that, Stacey.
It was Plato who said it.
Oh, well, you know, we're beyond a platonic relationship, I think.
Well, listen, you know, first of all, I wore this leather jacket in honor
of... It's got me going. Focused.
Yanis Varoufakis, the finance minister of Greece, of course, is always wearing a leather jacket. And then I realized, you know, why he always rides that little motorcycle? It's a great way to escape, because once all this debt pyramid comes crashing down, people are going to want to get the heck out of Dodge. And you don't want to get caught in a traffic jam. I got caught in a traffic jam during the 1994 L.A. riots, you know, with the 93 riots with Rodney King.
Yeah, it's not a little motorcycle. It's a pretty big motorcycle, old Yanis. But I get your point. He can just ride up to the Acropolis and escape.
Yeah. So debt is in the news, of course, other than with Greece. Let's look at the rest of the world. You know, we can mock Greece for, you know, having a debt crisis. But the fact is, we're all in a debt crisis. And how have the governments and the central banks responded? But by printing more and more money and pushing money onto bankers, and that's supposed to trickle down. Well, you have said it many times that it causes deflation. And here's the headline from the Wall Street Journal, which, in fact, proves this deflation that it's causing. First, a tweet from Pedro da Costa. Luxury car showroom agents in Shanghai say wealthy customers are delaying purchases to invest more money in stocks. Now, of course, we hear the likes of Janet Yellen and Mario Draghi warning all the time that people are delaying purchases because deflation, the prices are falling. Well, here we see they're delaying purchases because of the quantitative easing driving up the price of assets around the world.
Yeah, it's a funny extension of this history of the past 10 years of people not really being able to grasp the definition of inflation or deflation and how that works in the economy. If they think about deflation back in the 30s when the dollar was rising and people would defer their purchases as a result and the economy kept on contracting. But here you have a different kind of deflation in that people are deferring purchases in order to take advantage of the, not the dollar standard or an economic standard or a wage standard or a classical economic standard, but in a bubble standard, in a monetary bubble standard. That's the new monetary bulwark of the global economy, is what you used to call the Greenspan put. In other words, the central banks are always, always, always going to bail out everybody, and they'll always keep the debt going. Now it's at $200 trillion around the world and growing. And so this is a weird reflexive economic reality where these definitions become the polar opposites, but nevertheless, the effects are the same.
So let's look a little bit at the actual headline from the Wall Street Journal that Pedro da Costa is linking to, and it says, Shanghai stocks offer little fuel for China's economy. Even after last week's slump, benchmark has more than doubled over 12 months. Retail sales haven't kept pace. So even after a slump last week, China's benchmark stock index has more than doubled over the past year, but there is no sign that investors are splurging with their profits to help the sagging economy. Now, that has been the mission of the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan for about 30 years now, is their theory is that if we could only blow back up the housing bubble to where it was, people would use those profits, the wealth effect, and start spending. But what we see around the world is almost it's that hyperbolic stage where the price rises are going up so fast. In the case of Shanghai Stock Exchange, it's more than doubled in the past year. In San Francisco real estate, doubled in the past 12 months. So you're seeing, you know, the supersonic stage of the bubble, the blow-off top sort of thing coming. And when the top comes, when it blows off for real, we're all in danger. But as in the meantime, nobody wants to lose those doubling of profits, and that's who turns down 100% profit? Why would you not? Why would you take your capital and invest it in a risky venture in, you know, building infrastructure when you could double your money in a year like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, back in 1971, the world went on to the petrodollar standard when America defaulted on its bond market, and they closed the gold window. And now we're on basically a confetti dollar standard. It's a confetti. It's a confetti standard. So the central banks just keep printing. And unfortunately, it's not something that's sustainable. And people, of course, ask the question, well, why can't we just continue to keep interest rates at 0% and print ad infinitum forever and ever and ever? And that's because something called reality. Well, unfortunately, when it does regress to the mean, or reversion to the mean, all the connection to the historical precedents have been severed, so there'll be a lot of confusion. Nevertheless, that will happen.
So, well, let's look at the San Francisco bit of the equation, which I was talking about, and that is San Francisco versus America and housing bubble 2. Since January 2012, the median price for all homes in San Francisco has shot up 107%, according to Paragon Real Estate Group's June 2015 report, now 42% higher than during the peak of the prior all-time housing bubbles. And I have a chart here inspired by, this our friend over there. Chart. Here's the housing bubble. We'll blow up to full screen the graphic.
No, I like these charts like this. It gives people an eye test at the same time.
Exactly.
That they're getting their information.
So here's the just the U.S. housing on the bottom. It's been kind of flat. You see the little national bubbles just a little bit. Here's California, the yellow line. But as you can see with the black line there, that's San Francisco. This is the hyperbolic end of, the hyperbolic movement at the end of a bubble, it looks like. You know, everybody's coming up with, well, this is a new normal. Things are different here. People in San Francisco earn more money than the rest of the United States. But, in fact, it's that magic ratio of 10 to 1. So in San Francisco, the median wage is $77,000, which is 50% more than the rest of America, but house prices are 500% more. So they turn 50% into 500%.
Look, if you want to understand how badly this is dislocated, you can't really look at just the stock price and San Francisco house price. You have to look at the big picture. So when you have mass shootings in various states in the United States and the incredible violence going on in the street, this is a direct result of this economic policy that favors confetti standard versus having real wages. If there were real wages and real opportunities and people would be able to get an education without going massively into debt, you wouldn't have the mass shootings you have in America right now. But this is the trade-off that the current administration and previous administrations have made. They're willing to let their Americans essentially form a circular firing squad and blow each other up so that a few houses prices in San Francisco can double in the past year. That's the trade-off. They're comfortable with that. That's their culture. We can't, we have to accept that that's what they enjoy doing.
But it's not just a limited to one area, because the house prices in San Francisco, as I said, are exactly the same increase in price, exactly as the Shanghai Stock Exchange over the past year. In terms of this blow-off top that we see as well, we're seeing that bond prices, these same sort of movements in bonds, which are negative in Europe. So everywhere you look is this sort of movement. And how we escape that, I don't know.
Well, look, if the central banks print trillions and trillions of dollars, if it were equally distributed in the economy, you would have a more harmonious society. But because it's financially engineered so that 99% goes into a few pockets, you have violence on the street. They're engineering both house price gains and violence. Correlation there.
Well, because first of all, you can't get a job, even at McDonald's across many parts of America, without a college degree, a university degree. And what happens? The price of university degrees skyrocket. So you have huge amounts of debt in order to get the job at McDonald's. And then it's the McDonald's in San Francisco, which are paying the most. But in order to go to San Francisco, you've got to pay those huge, exorbitant house prices, which trickle down to huge rents. Now, in terms of all these extreme movements, remember, incomes have not increased at all since the financial crisis.
That's what I'm just saying.
Yeah.
There has been no increase in incomes versus the increase in speculative bubbles in these assets, and the result being violence and mass shootings as a result. That's the canary in the coal mine.
People look at that. It's the same across, say, London. We haven't had any mass shootings here.
No, because
here,
they don't have availability of guns.
Yeah.
But people act out here. They drink themselves quite heavily. They're obese. That's how they act out. These extremes. They don't have guns. If they had guns, they'd be killing each other just like in towns in America.
So here we have, again, like I'm talking about in the world, quantitative easing is causing asset price bubbles in bonds, stocks, and housing across the world. The wealthy that it's supposed to trickle down to us is supposed to create a wealth effect, but it's only going to the extremely wealthy, those with $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, $100 million, $1 billion, $10 billion. It's not trickling down,
no.
And therefore it's not creating a real economy.
No.
And here in the United Kingdom, one of the biggest bond fund investors in the world came out. It's time to hold physical cash, says one of Britain's most senior fund managers. It may be time to move money under the mattress. High-profile fund managers explain how to prepare for a systemic event. So in particular, they're talking to Ian Spreadbury, who invests more than £4 billion of investors' money across a handful of bond funds for Fidelity, including the flagship Money Builder Income Fund, is concerned that a systemic event could rock markets, possibly similar in magnitude to the financial crisis of 2008, which began in Britain with a run on Northern Rock. So he's in particular concerned about global debt levels, in particular mortgage debt, which triggered the last financial crisis here in the United Kingdom. This massive amounts of debt, it's all tied to debt. As we see, this is the Minsky moment we could be hitting, or else there's a new magical formula.
Right, but in the meantime, we see evidence of what's coming with mass violence in America, with people in Britain running away to join ISIS. That's instead of shooting each other, they join ISIS and go shoot people overseas. That's the equivalent. And that's the evidence that this collapse is coming. On the margins, the people who are being disenfranchised and destroyed are already taking action now. Now imagine when you actually add the collapse, those people are, in America, there's 280 million or 310 million people, and there's 250 million guns. I can only imagine what will happen. But we'll have to wait and see and get the popcorn out. Because
I'm staying for the second half, by the way, because I've got my Mad Max outfit.
Oh, you are staying for the second
half. I'm taking over this episode.
Oh, that's excellent. More Stacy in the second half. Excellent. Well, don't go away. More Stacy.
Well, this is the latest from NASA, California Institute of Technology. About one-third of the Earth's largest groundwater basins are being rapidly depleted by human consumption. You know, the population explosion, especially in the third world, in the non-white world, not the third world. Despite having little accurate data about how much water remains in them, according to two new studies led by the University of California, Irvine, using data from NASA's Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment satellites. This means that significant segments of the Earth's population are consuming groundwater quickly without knowing when it might run out, the researchers conclude. The findings are published today in Water Resources Research. Quote, available physical and chemical measurements are simply insufficient, said UCI professor and principal investigator Jay Famiglietti, who is also the senior water scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Given how quickly we are consuming the world's groundwater reserves, we need to coordinate a global effort to determine how much is left. You think they're going to quit using it in the third world? Or here for fracking and all that kind of stuff? Yeah, right, sure. So anyhow, that's the news there. With fracking, of course, they're polluting more and more of the aquifer water in North America. And as we allow more people to just pour over the borders and population, birth rate go up, up, up among the, as far as I'm concerned, undesirables, well, what do you expect? So, it's more tick, 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 tick. How about that? That's my mechanical ticker. So, I guess the message so far in the show is start putting your money in your mattress or hiding something away. and try to live where they're around where there's clean, clear water available, and hopefully on a property that's got your own well. Now, as I told you before, one of our very loyal lone wolves out there is becoming musical, or maybe has been musical for a long time. And that particular lone wolf has sent me along a little ditty here that I think I'm going to sing for you, just a cappella, which is not going to be very good, but I think we need to add more verses to this song, and I'll start singing it around when I go out to do karaoke. What do you think about that? Let's see. Here it goes now. This is sung to the title, Take This Job and Shove It. And the lone wolf just made it up this morning. Take this flag and shove it. I ain't flying it no more. The whites caved in and the niggers got their way, and I'm still racist to the core. You better not try to stand in my way. My Confederate flag won't soar. Take this flag and shove it. I ain't flying it no more. There you go. I'm going to try to get some music with that. Maybe we can add some more verses to it, because it's basically a very good song. I like it. Thank you, Lone Wolf. Boy, here's a hot story. In a letter to the ambassador of India to the United States, Abraham H. Foxman, the big chief of the Anti-Defecation League, who was just about to retire, called on the Indian government to publicly condemn the sale of Hitler ice cream cones across India. According to news reports, the ice cream cone box features a picture of Hitler wearing a Nazi uniform and another of Hitler wearing a top hat with a swastika emerging from the top. Now, can you believe, after all this time, how this idiot can be so worried about Hitler's picture on an ice cream cone? Well, it must mean that Hitler still strikes fear in the hearts of these Jews, because any little thing and they go absolutely bonkers. But I think the time has arrived when people are going to say, fuck you, Abraham Foxman, fuck you. Well, they say that Dylan Roof, the assassin of these blacks in the church down in Charleston, was obsessed with the Heil Hitler number 88. She called it a symbol, common symbol in the neo-Nazi white nationalist movements. In the world of white supremacists, the number 8 has come to, and that she explains all that. Well, if they hadn't have fed him full of such anger-causing drugs like they do to get all these guys going crazy, he'd have probably just sat in his room and talked about 88 and waved his little flag. But when you put all this mind-altering drugs into people, it drives them over the line. And so if you don't want to solve that, forget about solving anything else. Well, as the nation reels from last week's mass shooting in Charleston, the latest mass shooting, one of many, South Carolina, which left 9 churchgoers and 1 prostitute dead. Data shows that since 9/11, there have been more deadly attacks in the U.S. carried out by right-wing assailants than by jihadists, according to a count of lethal terrorist incidents by homegrown extremists tallied by the New America Foundation. Oh, remember that New America Foundation? That's Bush and his butt boy, the ones New America Foundation that set up the deal to invade Iraq. A New York-based nonprofit, the Charleston incident, brought the number of right-wing attacks since 9/11 to 19, resulting in the deaths of 48 Americans. By contrast, the goody-two-shoes jihadist, a term often used to describe radical Muslims, carried out only 7 attacks, resulting in 26 deaths. But the elephant in the room is they're not talking about all the people the niggers killed over the same time. Isn't that some sort of terrorism? Isn't that what's taking place in the black community? Terrorism? People behind closed doors, behind iron gratings on their windows and everything, as these druggies murder people, shoot through their windows and shoot through their houses and everything. Isn't that terrorism? No, that can't be terrorism. I see the Dominican Republic, which is the half of the island next to Haiti, are getting smart. Finally, you see, they brought in all these Haitians to do the cheap labor, just like we do the Mexicans. But now they're saying enough's enough, and hundreds of thousands of Dominicans of Haitian heritage and Haitians living in the Dominican Republic face deportation under new immigration policy. You don't think that's got something to do with race? The Dominican side of the island's a lot wider than the Haitian side. In fact, I've been in touch over the years with whites who live in their own little section in Dominica, the Dominican Republic. So, anyhow, even in a country where they're surely not, most of them aren't Aryan whites, they're getting the message, if they're going to save their culture of what they've got, they better get rid of these. It's not worth the cheap labor. Of course, this has sparked international outrage. Guess who from? All the media, you know, they get on this. My God, you're shipping your niggers out? You can't do that.
Hungry and risking it all.
These people want to get as far away as they can.
The migrant crisis sweeping Europe. Our governments turning their backs on those that need help the most. Compass with Sheila.
Camp of the Saints is coming on big time. Well, all I can say is 9 people being shot in a church in Georgia is going to seem like a Disneyland thing in a few years. You ain't seen nothing yet, and it's not going to be just blacks. It's going to be everybody going for everybody. Well, I see that over-the-hill crooner, Pat Boone, is asking President Obama to empathize with Mr. Foote. I remember one time way back in the early 60s, sitting at an anti-communist program at the Santa Monica City College. I sat right behind Pat Boone. And, of course, he was the one, the crooner from the old days, the 50s, when he started the craze of white bucks and all that, Mr. Goody Two-Shoes. He's always been a Christian fanatic. Anyhow, Pat Boone is sick of racism. Of course, it helped his career. At least he's sick of people pointing it out. The conservative commentator, which I wish they'd be suing these people for using the term conservative, because none of them are conservative. Conservatives are gone and dead. The same way with true liberals. They're gone and dead too. The one-time teen idol complained that President Barack Obama pointed out the racial element in every highly publicized killing of an unarmed black person by a white police officer or vigilante, reported to Right Wing Watch. Mr. President, for God's sake, America's sake, quit so often calling crimes that involve black persons racist. Well, what the hell are you going to call it? Said Boone, who was best known for his sanitized version of rock songs by black artists in the 50s, in a column posted online at WorldNet Daily. Okay, let's see what else good old Patrick has got to say. He's looking. He held his age very well for a long time, but now he's going down the tube. Let's see here. Boone said he was deeply disappointed that Obama, the nation's first black president, continued to discuss racial issues. Quote, as the president who came to office, a black man promising to bring people together, a man ideally suited for the job, since you were born both black and white. No, mixed. And you had a God-given chance to actually proclaim and demonstrate that racial divides and prejudice had greatly
diminished and our society was truly becoming colorblind, the former pop singer complained. Of course, Pat Boone could say these things because he lived in a nice place up in Hollywood or Beverly Hills in a nice mansion. He's never had any want or anything, never had blacks trying to kick his head in. No, been a protect. That's part of this protected class. Boone expressed similar concerns to Charleston terror suspect Dylan Roof about the coverage of Trayvon Martin's killing by George Zimmerman, and he echoed police claims that the shooting of Michael Brown, who he described as a very large black man. Well, was he a very large black man? Quote, at no time do I recall your mentioning the far greater instances of black-on-black crimes. Well, that's true. The higher percentage of crimes of all types committed annually by blacks, or the senseless looting and violence that follows the inflamed protest after one of the above-mentioned incidents, Boone said. Strange that you, our half-white president, have little to say about these things. Well, it sounds maybe Pat's not so bad after all, because he's saying the right things there. Boone dismisses the massacre of the 9 black worshipers last week by an avowed white supremacist as the satanically inspired attack against Christians. There we go. Christ insanity always gets into it. Yes, I said, inspired by Satan, Boone reiterated. Though this had a racist element, to be sure, it was more than that and a far greater significance to America than that. This boy wasn't just a sadist or even criminally insane. He was carefully prepared and led by the devil himself to kill as many Christians as he could. But he did go into a black church. The fact that they were black was an excuse more than a reason. Pat Boone still makes a lot of money off his gospel singing, so got to remember that. Probably most of his income now is off his black or his Christian music. He asked Obama to look in the eyes of these sad, forlorn, lost evildoers, identifying Roof specifically, as well as the men who gunned down innocent bystanders at Aurora, Sandy Hook, Columbine, and Overland Park, Kansas. Yeah, and let's find out how many mind-altering drugs they were being fed, too, while you're at it. Look deeply into their inner beings, not the skin color or professed motives, and you'll encounter demons from hell, minions of Satan himself, coming diabolically against anything that God loves, he said. Boone urged that the president to declare the United States a Christian nation or else. Simple, stupid racism is not our problem, Mr. President, Boone said. It is declaring that we are no longer a nation under God, the Jewish God, and as our society increasingly moves away from God's protective... I don't think God's done a very good job of protecting most Americans, or a lot of Americans. Loving hand, we can expect more and more horrific demonic evil. Oh, it's not people's fault. It's the devil. The devil made me do it. That's the way it's going. Donald Trump vows to sue Univision for canceling Miss USA. It's common sense that Mexicans are rapists. Well, a lot of them are. So what? Tell them, Trump. Tell them. Yeah, baby. I like him. Not because I think he's a real genuine person, because he shakes the bush. Nothing Tommy likes more than shaking the bush. Just remember, watch out for that devil. He's everywhere, and he'll make you do something terrible. Yeah, he hides around every corner. And it's not you. No, not you. It's the devil. Boy, here's a story for you. A federal judge accused the U.S. government of a lack of candor and ordered it to return $167,000 that was seized from a man who was stopped for a minor traffic violation. According to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, a Nevada state trooper stopped Strawn Gorman's motor home on Interstate 80 in January of 2013 for allegedly driving too slow. Yeah. According to, oh, wait a minute here. After Gorman declined to let the trooper search his vehicle, the trooper let him go without a citation, but the trooper radioed ahead for the Elko County Sheriff's deputy to perform a second stop with a drug-sniffing dog. The dog alerted that the deputy to something suspicious in the motor home, and $167,000 was found hidden. Wait a minute. Was found hidden throughout the vehicle. Gorman's money was turned over to the federal authorities to initiate civil forfeiture proceedings, but he was never charged with a crime. And of course, you know what the cops do with that money. They put it in their own budget, and then they buy all kinds of stuff for the department, and half the cops split up the money. Authorities said that they were suspicious that Gorman was going to use the money to buy marijuana. Well, so what? Did he buy marijuana? Gorman, however, insisted that he was on his way to Sacramento to visit his girlfriend. Senior U.S. District Judge Larry Hicks accused the U.S. Attorney's Office in Reno of hiding information from the court about Gorman's initial stop for driving too slow. How many times have you seen somebody stop for driving too slow? No matter how this can be viewed, the two steps were for minor traffic violations, and they both were extended beyond the legitimate purposes of such a traffic stop, Hicks wrote, noting that the second stop would not have happened if it were not for the first. Hicks ruled that the government had violated Gorman's Fourth Amendment rights because the deputies did not have independent reasonable suspicion to conduct the second stop. Well, this, I'm not going to read the whole article, but this is typical government police state tactics, and it speaks to a lot of other things besides just this guy. This stuff happens all the time. Civil forfeiture is a way of police departments becoming vigilantes and seizing people's property and money. And what I understood was that they were trying to get rid of this, but I don't know. It looks like it's still around. Now, this may be a little weak because of my recording, but I think you can understand it, so I'm going to play it for you. And this is how crazy-ass the whole foreign policy is, if you didn't know that already. There is no foreign policy.
Conference, a one-day conference in Paris this week about this crisis in the Middle East that is a crisis just doesn't even get it. Well, to use Lisa Grande's word, catastrophic. Catastrophe. At a one-day conference in Paris this week, Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi had pressed his case for more support from the 25 countries in the U.S.-led coalition fighting ISIS, asking for more armament and ammunition. Now, did you hear that? The U.S.-led coalition of us and 25 countries. So are we to believe, and I guess we are, that the Islamic State is defeating the United States and 25 other countries? Huh? Now, when al-Abadi talks about the support the 25 countries in the U.S. are giving right now, some of the countries are giving support in this pushback against ISIS in the form of, I don't know, boxes of cereal, maybe, that would be considered support, or cans of tuna fish. You know, that would be considered support. I mean, this whole thing, al-Abadi said, quote, we're relying on ourselves, but fighting is very hard this way, end quote. You notice the madness here, the insanity? We're relying on ourselves to try to, I don't know, we were utterly and absolutely and totally annihilated by the United States twice. We don't have an army because in 1991, our entire country was salted with depleted uranium dust that worked its way into the reproductive systems of the women that live here and in the testes of the men. So consequently, we're giving birth to two-headed or no-headed children who at this point would have been old enough to go fight and die rather than just die in their cribs because they have no mouths and can't eat because of depleted uranium exposure. We're relying on ourselves, but fighting is very hard this way. Now, this grand coalition, led by the United States, has put together a mix of airstrikes. Oh, you can watch the video on MSNBC or CNN. You can see those, you know, those white videos, and there'll be a black thing moving across your screen. God only knows what it is. And all of a sudden, another black thing will come zipping across. And then there'll be a moment's hesitation, and then the black thing becomes real big and black, and then poofs into a... There you go. Those are airstrikes. So we have been providing a mix of airstrikes, intelligence sharing. How's that working out? And assistance for Iraqi ground operations against ISIS, assistance for Iraqi ground operations. What the hell does that mean? Assistance what? Where? How? There is no Iraqi army. The U.S. Consul General who moved in, what was his name? I forget. I don't care what it was. But what was the first thing they did with the Iraqi army? Destroy it. Dissolve it, took away their guns and other toys and told them to go home. So when they talk about an Iraqi army, what in the hell are they talking about? The U.S. made sure that such a thing was blown to oblivion. Just not with bombs, but with the stroke of a pen. There's no longer an army. Go home. Which immediately resulted in the kind of Muslim secular fighting that is igniting and lighting up the entire Middle East. Wow. Al-Abadi, the current Iraqi prime minister, until the oil companies decide they want a new one, you know, because this one will wear out, and they'll bring in the wear out time on an Iraqi prime minister is very short. Being Iraqi prime minister is a very short lived position. You're not going to be there very long, one way or the other. Okay, but Al-Abadi said more assistance was needed with Iraq, the entire country reeling after troops pulled out of Ramadi without a fight, Iraqi troops, and abandoned U.S. supplied tanks and weapons. So the deal is, of course, and you get this just as well as I do, we are the ones who provided the Taliban with all the weapons they could ever need when they were fighting, when they were called the Mujahideen and fighting against the Soviets. And now we have, and now, of course, or over a period of about 20, 30 years, the Taliban emerged and found all these wonderful U.S.-made weapons, woo, provided by the U.S. military-industrial complex. So they're well-equipped. And we've done the same now with the Islamic State. We have provided them with the most technologically up-to-date weaponry on the face of the earth. And we just gave it to them. Now, by proxy, we gave it to the Iraqis after we had utterly destroyed their military, their command structure, every single thing needed to field an army or any kind of a force to protect your country, we destroyed. And then we turned over to people who didn't know the one end of a cannon from the other. Where do we put this? We turned over to them the most sophisticated weaponry on the face of the earth. And what have they done with it? One thing. They've left it behind as they fled. Guess who has it now? Right.
You think those assholes don't know what they're doing in the Pentagon? Of course they know what they're doing. They're cycling arms for money and forcing arms and weaponry on countries that can't even afford it. And the weaponry a lot of times never even leaves the United States. And this is a way of arms manufacturing here in the United States. Keep grinding away, grinding away, grinding away. They're happy when these weapons get left behind. Because there's no design to win anything in the Middle East. It's just designed to be constant warfare, constant spending of billions of dollars every day, and constant leaving these new weapons behind for the so-called enemy to get, and then the next round will start someplace else, and the military-industrial complex can send more and more weapons over there to be grabbed by whoever. I'll tell you, if there wasn't a plan behind it, you'd say it's insane. But there's plan behind it. And these guys are making fortunes off military production here in this country and other countries doing the same thing. The guys at the top are making fortunes off manufacturing weapons. And killing people. Isn't it wonderful? Oh, it's wonderful. Aren't you proud of your country? Aren't you proud of these bastards in the Pentagon and Washington, D.C.? Aren't you proud of the State Department? Right. I know most people think when a war is over, the war is over, and let's go on from here. Yeah. But listen to this. When you imagine France and its scenic countryside, you might think of the picturesque villages, vineyards, plenty of rolling green hills. Anyhow, the green hills there in a certain area of France that you might drive through on a summer road trip, but there's one corner of the scenic country that no one's been able or allowed to enter for nearly 100 years, known as the Zone Rouge, the Red Zone. There's an image of a forsaken territory of a bewildered, abused soldier in an area originally covered by more than 1,200 square kilometers. In the years following the so-called Great War, remember how many million people died in France? In that insane war that your son of a bitch Wilson got our people into and changed the whole world because of what it did with the Turkish Empire and how that led to Israel, all this kind of shit that came out of World War One, and also, if you don't like what happened to Germany in the Second World War, well, it came right out of the First World War. Around 100 kilometers, roughly the size of Paris, is strictly prohibited by law from public entry, nor agricultural use because of the impossible amount of human remains, get that, human remains and unexploded chemical munitions yet to be recovered from the steppe inside the real no-go zone. So you think war's over just when they sign the papers, huh? Well, it's the same way over in Vietnam. With all the mines and crap and defoliant that went into Vietnam. So here's a place of, geez, just think of that large a piece of France Nobody can go in there because they've never been able to clear it of the crap and the poison and mustard gas and so forth. Oh, these people who love war, man. They will point their finger and say how horrible that Mr. Foote killed 9 people. Why, they kill millions and screw the land up forever. Yeah. That's who you got to start looking after. Take your things in priority. Priority. Of course, all the leaders that got us into World War I and caused this butchery that was so many millions died and the land polluted, they're all dead now. Yeah, they're all dead now. But what they have left is still just as dangerous and maybe more than when it happened. That's why people like Cheney and Bush and all the rest of them down through the years that are warmongers need to have the people rise up and have some real Nuremberg trials. You know, the Nuremberg trials were not just for the Germans. They were supposed to be go on into the future, and anybody else who did something that was what was perceived to be that far out of line would pay the price. But the only people who paid the price were the Germans, which is typical. Typical stuff. Yeah, after World War I, unable to keep up with the impossible task of removing endless undetonated weapons, humans and animal remains, the French government decided to forcibly relocate the residents of the area, which led to the creation of the Zone Red. Entire villages wiped off the map were considered casualties of war. One village, Douaumont, destroyed village, once manicured farmland, was abandoned and without human presence, soon became an unrecognizable thick forest. For decades, however, much of this deceiving lush forest land was still regularly used by forest keepers and hunters, until 2004, when German researchers found extra levels of dangerous levels of up to 17% arsenic in the soil, tens of thousands of times higher than levels typically found previously within the red zone. Now, this is not in Iraq. This is in France, the white homeland. The water in the area was found to contain toxic levels of arsenic that were 300 times above the tolerated amount, and abnormally high lead levels were recorded in some animals, particularly in the livers of hunted wild boars. The nearby residents, forest keepers and hunters of the area, like the ones who built the abandoned hut, there's supposed to be a picture here, to have lunch and store their prey in, were never subject to any medical study. The authorities finally prohibited public access to the site in 2012, known locally now as the Place Gaz, place of the gas. The French government actually formed a special agency dedicated entirely to the ongoing munitions clearing called the Department du Déminage. Over time, they managed to reduce the size of the red zone and return less effective zones to civilian and agricultural use. Unfortunately, in several cases, this was done much too prematurely. Till the mid-70s, much of the cleanup was only done superficially, destroying hundreds of thousands of unexplored World War I chemical bombs without considering the contamination to the soil and the water. So now it's not gas we're leaving all over the place, these economic struggles. We're leaving depleted uranium, which will make places unlivable for maybe 1,000 years. This has been just, 100 years or a long time for World War I, but it's still unlivable. But think of the depleted uranium that no one wants to seem to talk about and how it's infected thousands of American troops, but is killing hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and other people. Depleted uranium. Ask your congressman about it. He'll say, duh, what's that? Better yet, he'll say, we're looking into it. Alarming amounts of lead debris scattered by shrapnel were also left in place, contaminating the soil with non-biodegradable lead, mercury, zinc, likely to remain for 10,000 years to come. That's 10,000 years to come, and that's not even depleted uranium. You see, that's why you never can trust leaders. Powerful leaders can never be trusted because they're basically criminals. You got to break it down to local control. You have to, for your own survival, turn your back on any central government at all. After World War I, in a rush to convert areas of the growth of crops and livestock, the first industrial pig farm was established as early as 1929 near the site of the Battle of Verdun. Longest sustained conflict of World War I, lasting 300 days and costing more than 300,000 French and German lives. The 25-hectare pig farm was riddled with shell holes and the chemical treatment of the soil. The French word Verdunization, referring to the treatment of drinking water using chlorination, which originated in Paris in 1911, actually takes its name from this region. Farmers in less dangerous repopulated yellow and blue zones still hit shells every year, exploding their tractors and narrowly escaping death by the remains of a 100-year-old war. In Verdun, there are road signs to indicate a dumping grounds for farmers to leave the shells they plowed up on their land to be collected by authorities. They call it the Iron Harvest, in which nearly 900 tons of unexploded munitions are recovered each year by Belgium and French farmers after plowing their fields. Crops from these areas should be continuously monitored by the French and European government, but there is some doubt as to whether this will actually is being done enough or even at all. In other words, they've always got the money to cause havoc and death, but they never have the money to clean up the mess. More than a century later, there are still large quarantine parts of the red zone in France where 99% of plant and animal species perish. They can't live. Clearing the red zone is an extremely dangerous job, and fatal casualties from gas shells are not uncommon among the munitions removers. Authorities estimate that if they continue working at the current rate, it could take anywhere from 300 to 700 years to complete. Isn't that wonderful? Think of where this crap is on the ground where all these wars have been. Think of how much of that stuff is still in the Soviet Russia, laying on the ground where millions of people got killed and the war went on and on and on. There's places like this all over the world. And you're worried about Mr. Foote. Other experts believe the zone red will never be fully cleared of its unexploded munitions. Meanwhile, teetering on the edges of the zone red on northeastern France, surrounding villages and towns are making the best of a bad situation. To compensate for this, they quarantine the land they can't and probably never will be able to farm or ever set foot on. Locals take advantage of the region's military history. I guess they have guided tours. In Pozieres, one of the villages that was completely destroyed in World War I and subsequently rebuilt, there is a cafe and a restaurant called Les Tamis, dedicated to the sacrifice of the Allied forces, which has reconstructed a World War I trench in its back garden for tourists to take pictures of. Now let's think of all the white Americans who went over there in World War I because of that bastard Wilson. I mean, you know, there was no logical reason for us to be in that war except to back up the oligarchs of the day. And so you might have had an uncle or a grandfather or even a husband or somebody back then who went over there and got their asses blown off for what? For what? North of Verdun, in the ghost villages that died for France and were never rebuilt, discovery trails and memorial sites have been opened to the public around the red zone. You know, they're good at building monuments. Good at, you know, oh, this is too bad. Well, why did you get in the first place? Because you're war lovers. Not personal combat. Most of you are chicken shit to get into personal combat, but boy, if I got a cannon and I can kill that son of a bitch 20 miles away, that's going to be fun. Locals also keep themselves busy with their own impressive private museums of war remains they've collected over the years in the area, lending pieces to local tourist museums. Well, what else can they do? They can't farm. They can't have any pigs or cows or chickens. They can't raise wheat or corn or anything. The only thing they can do is recreate little museums of the macabre World War I genocide. I recommend you watch one anti-war film that I really like, and that is The Red Badge of Courage, about World War I and how ridiculous it was, how horrible it was. Anyhow, a 20-hectare contaminated site abandoned by the French Society of Munitions Recovery, which went bankrupt in 2006. No one knows the effect this pollution is causing, and no one known when or how it will be cleaned up. The red zone is still very much off limits, an area of untold dangers to its surroundings. In 2012, it was announced that the consumption of drinking water was banned in 5 municipalities in the area due to excessive levels of perchlorate used in manufacturing of rockets and ammunition. Each of these municipalities affected by the ban correspond exactly to the locations of old front line or major World War I battlefields. This is why you can never trust these leaders in these governments. Almost all of them are psychopaths. And leaving your future and your kids' future and your future of your town or what to these assholes is criminal. And to go out here and get all excited when they run for office so they can get into position to further screw you and screw the land, screw the water, screw everything else, makes you a criminal too. In short, the zone red is a microcosm of battlefields frozen in time, the little known but very real no-go zone of France. There's a true story for you. Discover the fascinating in-depth documentation of the zone red by French photographer Olivier Saint-Hilaire, who has captured every facet of this forbidden French no man's land. I found the script of this, but I didn't find the pictures, so if anybody's got the pictures, they could send around it. It's ugly, but it would be interesting of what we do to ourselves, what the white race does to itself. Can't blame the niggers for that. I mean, you know, you can't blame them for that. Well, I all ended on that note, a real happy note. Happy note, yeah, really, happy note. And you'll notice a lot of my information I get comes from left-wingers, or what you used to derisively call liberals. But if they're telling the truth and they've dug up the crap, I'm going to run it. And the right wing can kiss my white ass.
A film, True Detective, you might have seen it, Matthew McConaughey. And the other one, I forgot his name. But anyhow, I thought this was pretty amusing, so I cut the clip out of the film to run it for you. And I forgot to tell you, this was these two detectives had gone to this tent revival meeting. They're looking for a guy, but the conversation between the two detectives is very interesting. One is agnostic, maybe atheist, but pretty logically speaking. The other one's sort of nominal Christian, but he's a rounder, he's a whoremonger, he's a drunk. So let's listen to this interplay between these two detectives as they're standing at the back of this crowd out of nowhere's land in a revival tent.
Where is natural?
Parish FD said the church burned down 4 months earlier. No prince put out an APB on Friends of Christ. A week later, they were in Franklin.
revival ministry, old-time religion. You can imagine what Mr. Charisma thought of that.
Who do you think the average IQ of this group is, huh?
Can you see Texas up there on your high horse?
What do you know about these people? Just observation and deduction. See a propensity for obesity, poverty, a yen for fairy tales. Folks putting what few bucks they do have into little wicker baskets being passed around. I think it's safe to say that nobody here is going to be splitting the atom, Marty.
You see that? Your fucking attitude. Not everybody wants to sit alone in an empty room beating off the murder manuals. Some folks enjoy community, the common good.
Man, with the common good, it's got to make up fairy tales, and it's not good for anybody.
Your sorrows pin you to this place. They divide you from what your heart knows. And there are a lot of good hearts out there. I've looked out there. I've seen a lot of good hearts out there. I see a lot of good out there.
I mean, can you imagine if people didn't believe the things they get up to? Exact same thing they do now. Just out in the open. Bullshit.
It'd be a fucking freak show of murder and debauchery, and you know it.
If the only thing keeping a person decent is the expectation of divine reward, then, brother, that person is a piece of shit. And I'd like to get as many of them out in the open as possible.
Well, I guess your judgment is infallible, piece of shit-wise. You think that notebook is a stone tablet?
What to say about life? You gotta get together. Tell yourself stories that violate every law of the universe. Just to get through the goddamn day. What's that say about your reality, Marty?
When you get to talking like this, you sound panicked.
You think it's all a scam, huh? All them folks? They just wrong?
Oh, yeah. Been that way since one monkey looked at the sun and told the other monkey, he said, for you to give me your fucking share. People. So goddamn frail, they'd rather put a coin in a wishing well than buy dinner.
Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, your arms open and closed. The echoes of my life can never contain to see the truth about you. You move the feather in the ash, you touch the leaf with its flame.
Transference of fear and self-loathing to an authoritarian vessel. It's catharsis. He absorbs their dread with his narrative. Because of this, he's effective in proportion to the amount of certainty he can project. Certain linguistic anthropologists think that religion is a language virus that rewrites pathways in the brain, dulls critical thinking.
Well, I don't use $10 words as much as you, but for a guy who sees no point in existence, you sure fret about it an awful lot. And you still sound panicked.
At least I'm not racing to a red light.
Yeah, man, at least I'm not racing to the red light. That was a great intercourse between those two guys. That's funny, but it's sad too, because it's so true. And every day I live, the more it makes sense. Yeah, baby.